Okay, we're finally up to the topic that we've all been waiting for. We are going to talk about something very cheery. We're talking about divine excision. We'll be talking about Kharis. So let me share the screen with all of you. And we are up to our sixth PDF of my scans.
Rabbi,
Okay.
just before you start, it's been so long, and maybe everybody else remembers. What is as exact as you could be definition of gamul?
So like gmul is like recompense and getting
Okay,
your
that's what I thought.
God paying you back,
Retribution.
retribution. Like it's I think it, I don't know if it necessarily has a negative connotation per se. It's the same source as gemilas chasadim. So I guess I'll try to find you the most neutral translation of it. But yeah, that's the idea. Because the Ramban spends the whole book talking about, why do some people get this? Why do some people get that punishment? Why do they get this reward? Why do they get in this world? Why do they get in the next world? So that's good. It's always good to know what the name, about the name of the book we're spending so much time on. So I'm glad you asked. Okay. So Kharis Ugehenim. This is gonna be a lot of fun, right? So there are many averos, many sins in the Torah, which incur kares, incur divine excision. Later on in the Ramban, maybe we'll get to it in 2 weeks' time from now, we'll talk about these different kinds of kares, and not every single thing in the Torah that says you get kares for means that you'll get the full extent of kares. But let's try to understand what it means. The definition of kares is the destruction, the loss of the soul. The kachamar b'sifra, kares. What's it mean when we say kares? Talmud Lomar, it's based on a pasuk in Leviticus, in Vayikra, v'avadati etz nefesh ahi. I will destroy this soul. That teaches us that what does kares refer to? Kares refers to being cut off, to the loss, to the destruction. Now you may have thought, okay, if someone's soul just dissipates and ceases to exist, well, at least that you could say it's a painless experience. He'll die and he loses his soul. And it just dissipates the same way the life force of an animal dissipates when it dies. Because this living being, this living entity, the soul does not dissipate just because the body dies. The same way that an angel, whether it manifests itself as a celestial being or something else, it also doesn't cease to exist once that guf, once the guf, once its physical body dies. So I guess in the ancient belief that the stars were really angels up in the sky, that's why people used to worship them. So if there's a supernova one time and one star explodes, I guess what they assumed was that the angel who was in charge of it doesn't die along with the star. So it's important to note is that there's a difference between the soul of an animal versus the soul of a human being. So this is, a question I've gotten many times about Judaism's perspective on the afterlife for animals. When my cat dies, when my dog passes away, what does Judaism have to say about the afterlife for them? So I remember I got my first Avela Shaila, actually. My first laws of mourning question was a number of years ago, and it was someone who was asking me, she's Reform, and she was asking me, a colleague from work, do I say Kaddish? Oh, no, not say Kaddish. Are there any special prayers I could say when we bury our dog? So in the end of the day, I really gave her a piece of Tehillim to say, but what I did was I didn't give her Tehillim to save for the dog. I gave her to Hilma to save for herself. The kind of Tehillim I framed for her were paragraphs where you talk about God comforts me, God is with me through difficult times, Imo Anochi Betzara. So it's not focusing so much on the animal, which we'll see in a moment what Ramban's perspective on the afterlife for animals is, but it was on how can a human handle these kind of difficult experiences. So after I gave it to her, she said, okay, you know, just curious if there's any prayers I could say in addition to the Kaddish that we'll be saying for my pet. So that was my first Avela Shilat I ever got. It was about a pet, it wasn't about a human. But I guess you gotta work your way up, right? So Ein Nefesh HaBehema Betela, the soul of the animal doesn't fully dissipate. The Yeshesh Tashuv Nefesh HaBehema V'Tisbatel. Basically, Ramban's going to say, this is the theory of, you know what, I learned this probably in like an earth science or chemistry. I forgot what the term is. Someone can remind me. The idea is that once matter is created, it could take on different forms, but when it's destroyed, matter isn't lost. Matter just reconstitutes itself in different forms. If someone can remind me what that's called, you'll let me know. If not, then...
Is it ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny?
Wow, I don't know what any of that means, but if that's the definition, Phyllis, then we'll go with that. Do you want to explain the phrase?
What you said made me remember that. I'll look it up.
Okay, great. Because I remember there was some sort of term, but you know, then again, I wasn't like a huge, I wasn't the most studious person back in high school. So, alas, I don't remember. But anyway, the soul of the animal doesn't fully dissipate. Well, he says it doesn't dissipate, but really it does, because what happens? Everything returns back to its source. The nature, the circle of life, the way it works is that when something is created, it eventually returns back to its origins. So an animal, which is formed by the air, it's formed by the four elements. When an animal dies, it returns to the earth. So, you know, again, this might just be my generation, but The Lion King, if anyone ever saw that, it's my first movie I ever saw as a kid, so I hold it very close. After my parents' wedding video. My parents' wedding video doesn't count as my first movie. but apparently had a huge impression on me because I had a little kiddish coast when I was a kid. And since that was the only movie I watched, and, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of act out the movies. So I took my little silver becher, my little kiddish cup that my parents got for me when I was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old, and I made a big stomp on it on Shabbos, said, and yelled, Mazel Tov. So it survived the impact, but you can see my parents still have it on display in the silverware cabinet, and there's a huge dent in it. So they always like to take it out every now and then when we visit. Yeah, I gave them something to remember me by. So why did I bring that up? Oh, because that doesn't count as my first movie. My real first movie was The Lion King. And in The Lion King, there's this whole talk that the father lion gives to the son, that Mufasa gives to Simba. And he talks about how the antelopes eat the grass, and then we return to the grass, and then the antelopes eat us. And it's all part of the circle of life. So, you know, cue the music. That's essentially what the Ramban is describing here. So, you know what? The Lion King, we know where they got it from now, right? They obviously stole it from this passage in the Ramban. He's the only one who thought of this. I'm being facetious.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi, it says here, theory of recapitulation, also called biogenic law, often expressed using Haeckel's phrase, ontogeny, recapitulates phylogeny, is a historical hypothesis that the development of the embryo of an animal from fertilization to gestation or hatching goes through stages resembling or representing successive adult stages in the evolution of the animal's remote ancestors. Is that what you meant?
I'm not sure if it's exactly what I meant, but it's good that we're relearning some of the terms we forgot from high school. So I do remember the term, but I'm not sure. So I guess what I'm just really getting at based on the Ramban is that matter doesn't dissipate into nowhere. You know, if you break something down, it just becomes something else. That's really
matter is neither created nor destroyed. That's the other one.
Oh, that's it. Okay, so there you go.
If that's what the one you were talking about.
That's the phylogeny, ontology.
No, that's something different.
Okay.
I thought it's energy and matter are conserved.
Oh, conservation of matter? Is that it?
Energy and matter are conserved.
Right. Okay. I thought there was a fancy term for it, but it may just be the conservation of matter. Okay,
we have.
Okay, so there we go. That's our definition. So, kinefesh behemoth tushuli sushu avir ve'asos. Remember, the rabbis believed in the science of their day, which actually, when you think about it, that's what we do today also. So if years from now, a rabbi ever gives a psak halacha, you know, they say you could break your fast if you have this condition. And later on, they figure out, oh, you know, this condition is not really so bad. You don't have to fast. You could fast even with it. The rabbi wasn't wrong in his psak. He was given just faulty data. But he was relying on the science of his day, which generally we say is a good thing to rely on a scientist. So the rabbis back then also relied on scientific data that was accepted in their day. Obviously, science back then was far more rudimentary than what we have now. So they believed in the four elements. So the animals are formed by the elements. They return to the elements. Kishar kol advarim ha-gufim ha-shavim li-yisodim va-afram bein dakim bein gasim. And this is like what we say at a funeral also, that we come from the earth and we return unto the earth, just like Adam was created from earth, so he returns into the earth. So the same way for animals as well. And this is the line I was telling you about. He says, nothing in the world that was created from the beginning is lost. Everything that was created from the beginning is still with us in some way or another today. Rak b'inyan hazeh, l'skalga l'losho l'yisodo. Who often call of them calls my kiyam ha'olam, kosh kin shizosa nefesh yel yona yeshur tiyah b'teva v'edah. So the same way that the animals' matter doesn't disappear into nowhere, so too a human being's soul also, logically, it would stand to reason that our souls, when someone dies, aren't lost, but they have to go somewhere. But our souls, unlike animals, are not formed by the four elements. As we mentioned, they're metaphysical. So they're not returning to the earth. They're not returning to the four elements. She'ena mehem. They're not formed from them. That's not their origin. And he points out many times that even the general philosophers of his day agree to this. Vimhi tashuv liyisoda. Now here's the thing though. When you say it is a punishment for someone's soul to be nispatel, to dissipate, and to return back to its original source, would that be a punishment? I would say not. It's not a punishment. Why? Because Bali Haviva has a shame shoving me soda. Ashreha vitovla. Kihu haschar hagalova agmul hanichbat. What is the ultimate way, the ultimate pleasure, the ultimate reward that is given? Is for your soul to cleave to God. Since God is the origin of our creation, our souls constantly want to return back to God. Lahavdil alfe havdalos. It's almost like, for all of you who watch Lord of the Rings, which might be none of you, the whole premise of Lord of the Rings is that they want to bring the ring to Mordor into the volcano that it was formed in, and they can't destroy it any other way. And the ring constantly wants to return back to its master, Lord Sauron, who created it, who's the bad guy. And, you know, I could elaborate more on Lord of the Rings, but I could see that this might be going over everyone's heads. Anyway, if you do know Lord of the Rings, the idea is that the ring always wants to return back to its creator. That's a huge part of the plot. So too, over here, Havdil Alfi Havdalos, our souls were created by God, and the idea is our souls desire to return to God. So if I were to say that what happens after, when a behemoth dies, when an animal dies, it returns back to its origins, So if a soul, when it gets destroyed and returns back to its origins, to God, kares then doesn't sound like such a punishment. So if kares means the soul gets broken down and returned back to its origins, that means you're returning back to God. But that is supposed to be a form of ultimate reward. So that can't really be the definition of kares, the Ramban says, because that would be a reward then. So therefore, Ramban needs an alternative way to explain how kares works, how divine excision works. But before we move forward on that, let me just pause. Was there anything I could clarify, any questions, before we proceed? Okay. Oh, sorry, was that something, Phyllis?
No, I was just thinking about kares and where that maybe it takes place in a different realm. I don't know. After we die or whatever.
Well, we will talk about, God willing, either next week or 2 weeks from now, whenever we get, probably 2 weeks when we get up to it. There are different forms and definitions of kares. There's kares that can happen here in this world, there's kares that can happen in the next world. Mm-hmm. So I think, is that what you're thinking about? How there can be different types?
Yes,
excellent.
Yes.
So the Ramban, Be'ezus Hashem, will elaborate on that. We're still creating the framework in the background. So now we're going to explain the nature of the punishment of kares. This is based on what we saw in Rosh Hashanah. So this is something that we talked about maybe four classes ago. I'm kind of losing track. I think this might be class 13 or 14 at this point. So the idea is that we say Kaddish usually for 11 months because we assume that when we're saying Kaddish for a relative, they were a decent person who's not going to go down to Gehenna for the full 12 months, even though Avelus, even though mourning is for 12 months. Now, why is that? Because in the 12th month, people who stay 12 months are those who are exceedingly wicked. Lefia Roilahem. So La'achar Gemar Dinam, after they are judged by God, Nishmasa Nisrefes Fein Nasin Afar, their soul immediately is burned, is consumed, and it is reduced to earth, to ashes. That means, however you envision the metaphysical form of the soul, that soul's consistency, integrity is broken down. Like a physical object that you would imagine, when it's burned, it returns, it's reduced to ashes. So then God takes these ashes and he spreads it under the feet of the righteous. Now, we talked about this before. Some of you may have been there that class. We mentioned this agadic, almost homiletical sounding idea that God burns the souls of the wicked, turns them and reduces them to ashes, then sprinkles them under the feet of the righteous. What does that mean to tell us, other than just the imagery that catches our attention? Now we're going to explain what the Ramban referenced a long time ago during our earlier classes. So these wicked people, they're not the most wicked, but they've been pretty bad people. They who go to Gehenna for 12 months, not just 11 months, so after they are punished, they are put under the tzaddikim, meaning the tzaddikim, the righteous, are in an area of the afterlife where people are enjoying themselves, where they are being given reward by God. So what's it mean that they're placed under them? It means, they are not no longer, after their 12-month stint in Gehenna, after they serve their time, they're no longer going to be punished. They're no longer going to suffer inherent pain. However, they, at the same time, they're not going to experience reward and pleasure either, which means essentially is that they're put almost, it sounds like, in a form of purgatory, I would say. because they're in limbo. They don't get punished, but they don't get rewarded. So they're kind of just in this parive state where nothing really happens to them. So I don't know if there, it's a little unclear if there's a separate place dedicated to this in the afterlife, because usually we think of this dichotomy of the world to come, Olam Haba, and Gehenna. But there seems to be a category of people who they don't really get the rewards of Olam Haba, they don't get the punishment of Gehenna, and they're kind of left somewhere in between. And that's, you know, that's a really odd idea, because you don't really see that anywhere else. So then that's one level. Then there's also the second category. And again, if you remember in our previous classes, we spent a lot of time talking about different categories of people when they die. If you did majority sin, if you majority mitzvos, but you committed it, but you never, you know, put tefillin on your entire life. So, v'amitzasim v'olam shizkiu rabbeinu. But then there's these people who kind of, they get purified from their sins, and they float up and they get put in this category. There are people who get punished, but ultimately, since they, you know, they're not such terrible people, they just committed a number of sins, they committed enough sins, so they will go to Olam Haba. They will also get reward and oneg, but not the same way that those who are truly righteous get reward in the next world. So the righteous and the wicked are given to this angel called Doma. So actually, they're both under the same category, but they're under the supervision of the same angel. Just these people get menucha, these people do not get menucha. And it's kind of a throwback to that idea. There's a discussion if, I think it's actually one of the footnotes. Let me see if it's over here. It'll come up at some point. But one of my favorite things I always like to circle back to that my Rebbeim told me back in high school is that Olam Haba and Gehenna are the same place, right? It's a Beis Medrash, and just the righteous people enjoy learning Torah, and the wicked people don't enjoy learning Torah. They break their head over the Reb Chaim, and they can't understand it for the life of them. So you're all doing the same thing, just how you experience the afterlife is based on whether you're being rewarded or not. So, you know, I always found it funny because, you know, I was just sitting in the Beis Medrash all day when I was like in middle school and in early high school, and I said, oh no, you know, I'm really not looking forward to Mashiach at this point, Olam Haba. So that was, you know, now it can be kind of nice. Now it'd be good. Wouldn't mind a Beis Medrash for a while. Anyway, so this category of people who, so what was this category we're talking about? In the Beor, he says, we're talking about people who are 50-50s. We spent a lot of time talking about those back in the day before Rosh Hashanah. But again, they may have deliberately never put on tefillin their entire life, assuming they were a man, or they refrained from some sort of mitzvah deliberately that they never, like they just never did that mitzvah their entire life. They refrained from
it. Aren't most people Beinonim?
Are most people Beinonim? So this is right, but this is not exactly Beinonim. So this is Beinonim.
That's why I asked you that question. I it sounds like they're below Beinonim.
This is right, because this is Beinonim, but they also within those 50% sins they committed, we're not just looking at the quantity of sin, we're looking at the quality as well. So if I forget to wear tefillin one day, that's not as bad as me never putting on tefillin my entire life. Deliberately knowing it's a mitzvah to put on tefillin, but I never put on tefillin my entire life. So this isn't a true 50-50. A pure 50-50 would not be in this category. A pure 50-50, God actually, we said, will, you know, either punish the person in this world a little bit, so he becomes a 51% mitzvah, 49% sin, or if there's no time, if he's set to die. We also said a while back, toward the beginning of this sefer, that God will just take away, he'll subtract from their ultimate reward, but they still get to go straight to Gan Eden, and they don't have to go to Gehenna.
So when it says, Rabbi, I'm sorry for the interruption.
Not at all.
When it says ad yom moto achakelo, what does that actually mean? What do you have to do to get to, you know, the right place where you will go to not go to Gehenna?
Right, so you're talking about how God desires for us to repent even until the day we die, right?
Yes, yes. So where does that put you if you repent just before you die? Where, in what category are you then?
Right. So, I mean, you know, if it puts someone in a 50-50, God will lean. God is mate klape chesed. I believe that was the phraseology. That then God considers a 50-50 person a 51%, 49% person. He leans lahakel, right? God leans toward judging people favorably. So that's the idea. So if someone repents for their sins before the end of their life, that could ultimately tip the scales for them. If someone was like a murderer, a rapist, and an Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and he was only did tshuva for murdering, but not for raping and for idol worship, then, you know, that still might not put them in a favorable category. It might subtract from their punishment in Gehenna, but, you know, ultimately you need to do repentance on enough sins that it could weigh the scales in your favor. That's the point, I believe.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. But again, you know, like how God actually, you know, calculates each mitzvah, you know, how much a mitzvah is worth, how much a sin is worth, we don't know. And that's what it says in Pirkei Avos, that we're supposed to treat a mitzvah kala like a mitzvah chamura. That even if there's what we perceive as a lighter mitzvah, we don't know what that means in God's accounting book. So yes, that's a little bit beyond our comprehension, or we're simply not privy to it. Okay, so regarding these kind of people, eventually they actually get reward as well, just not the same level as those who are abundantly righteous. And then the final category are the Rishayim Gemurim Achamurim Shani Domin Ledore Doros. These are the exceedingly wicked people who go down to Gehenna, Ledore Doros, for generation to generation. And over here, it's going to sound like eternity. We brought up a debate previously whether Dore Doros means for, like, let's say, four generations, which is much more than 12 months, or if it means for all eternity. So it sounds like eternity over here. Ratzon ha'adon yisbarach mekayem osam. So God, so now this is where Kares comes in. God actually wants to keep them alive. In fact, God does not let their souls fully go to rest. God does not let their souls just cease to exist. But instead, God retains their souls in order so that they could be punished, in order so that they could receive the just deserts for the sins that they committed. K'chsiv, kito alasam lo samus, veisham lo sechvet. The fire for these people, they'll never die, and the fire will never be extinguished. So that's the third and final category, and that's what the Ramban said. That's what the Ramban's getting to when he's talking about Kares. In fact, actually, in the Beor here, he brings up that what's it mean? Kozolasim lo samos. It's actually quite literal. There's harim alchas basarim lo samos. There's like this worm that consumes their flesh, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't die. The fire does not extinguish. And this tells us, this is krisus hanefesh al kares hanefesh al guf. This is the type of kares that is of the soul and the body. The point being is that what we're looking at over here, this description of kares, is not like an animal. An animal just returns to the earth and ceases to exist. It's, you know, its life force is gone. But when it comes to a human being's soul, not only does God not destroy it, but God also retains it in order so that they can receive the punishment for the egregious sins that they committed here on earth.
Could you summarize the three different categories, please?
Absolutely. So let me go back. Category, I mean, there are people who just don't go to Gehenna at all, which I didn't mention. If someone, it's 51% mitzvos, they only did good deeds. I mean, not only they did good deeds, they did majority good deeds, so then they just don't go to Gehenna. So we're not talking about that. What we're talking about are three categories of people who get punished by going to Gehenna and what happens to them after they're done with their term. So the first category are people who committed majority sin. But, you know, the sins themselves weren't anything particularly outstanding, nothing notable. They just quantitatively committed more sins than they committed mitzvos. So for people like that, they will go to Gehenna. And when they rise from Gehenna, they don't get the reward of the world to come, but their punishment ceases. That's category number one.
Are you talking about in that category, let's say people who didn't do positive mitzvot, something like that?
So they could have done positive mitzvot, but oh no. So all right. So the next category, which is what you're referring to, is people who are 50-50. So they're not as bad as the first category, but among their 50% sins that they committed, there were what Phyllis referred to, which are mitzvos that they never performed their entire life. They knew that there was a mitzvah to wear tefillin, and they refused. They said, you know what, I'm just never going to put on tefillin. Or birchas hamazon was the other example. They never benched after eating their entire life, full well knowing that they were supposed to say birchas hamazon after eating bread. So those people, they're not as bad because they're 50-50. So after they get punished, they do get to enjoy, reap the reward of the mitzvos they did in this world, but not to the same extent that those who are truly righteous, those who spent most of their time performing mitzvos in this world, receive. So it's kind of going out of order. Category number two that I just said is the least intense. Category number one I said before about the people who are majority sin, that's the middle category, the second the most intense. And then the third is the most intense, the most severe, which are Rishayim Gemurim, who, if you want the examples of what these people did, he rehashes it, I think, over here. Heretics, apostates, other words for heretics, those who denied the Torah, those who deliberately reject God's edicts, who reject God's laws. Those who are with us when we're talking about Onas Dvarim, I gave a mini series on Monday night about that. So we talked about a mumar lahachitz, which is someone who happens, like to eat a cheeseburger because they enjoy it and they succumb to their temptations. We're talking about someone who says God has no right to tell me not to eat a cheeseburger, and I reject God's right to tell me to do that. That puts you in this kind of category. Fortunately, most people don't try to, put their foot down and say God has no right to tell me to do this. But for those few people who do, it could land them in this category, actually. Okay.
Now, are we talking about just for Jews?
Are we talking about just for Jews? So that's interesting. So there, we talked about previously, we had a machlokis, actually. We brought up the Rambam, the Ritva, and a number of other theologians on this. I don't know if you call the Ritva a theologian, though. And the machlokis was, do non-Jews stay in Olam Haba? So we mentioned, based on Rashi, based on some opinions, that there is tchias amesim, but then eventually they die. But it seemed that the Rambam and many other Rishonim believe that righteous Gentiles, who abide by the Shemus Bnei Noach, they're decent people, they could also go to Olam Haba as well. We talked about, maybe they'll be the ones like Amalek, they're going to have to be the ones working the fields. They're going to be the ones who are going to be our servants, right? So, one person, I always imagine when I was in ninth grade that we get to call dibs on all the different celebrities. Like someone can say, okay, LeBron James is going to be, it's going to be the cleaning man in my house. We get to we're telling my Rebbe when we're ninth graders in high school, we're like calling dibs on all the different celebrities that we liked. For Olam Haba, when he told us that one. the silly things we did back then. Though that would be a fun, not politically correct at all, but it would be a funny exercise to do if you're in an environment that's acceptable to say that. But anyway, so those are the three categories.
You're okay here.
What was that?
I said you're okay here in this environment.
Oh, okay. There's also a recording on over here. So our friends listening on YUTORA, we need to be sensitive to them as well. But anyway, next, let's just do a preview for next time. I think this is a good place to end. So just to summarize, we started talking about Kares. Kares is divine excision. Well, how does divine excision work? Animals, they don't go to the afterlife. Animals, they return to their origins. Well, I would say when the soul returns to its origin as well, that's a reward for it. So what does God do? God actually keeps the soul of the wicked alive, the truly wicked, and punishes them in Gehenna Lidore Dos, for generation and generation. We'll talk about next time, God willing, why this is truly a punishment. The reason it's truly a punishment is because since the soul desires to cleave to God, and God keeps this person's soul away from cleaving to God, that is a form of punishment, because the soul wants nothing more to be close to God, but God keeps it in Gehenna, which is the ultimate punishment for the soul, because it keeps the soul from returning to its origins.
Why would a wicked person or heretic want to cleave to God? They want to go away from God.
So, I mean, that might be their sinful nature that's taking them away. But it seems to be the Rambam believes that an inherent intuition of the nefesh, of the soul, is that the soul wants to cleave to God. So, it's possible that bodily temptations, physical temptations, take someone away from their true desire. When you separate the soul from the body, the soul wants nothing more than to cleave to God himself. So that's part of the idea of when we no longer have our bodies and we're only souls, there will be no desire to sin anymore, because the only way that we gain schar, that we are rewarded by God, is when there's lefum sara agra, when we have challenges, when we have to overcome temptations to stray from God, which are generally due to the fact that we are material as well. But once our souls are separated from our body, they're pure, they want nothing more than to cleave to God, and therefore, we can't get reward for performing mitzvahs. Angels can't get reward either. Early soul, all the soul inherently desires is for God. And God willing, we will elaborate on this idea next time, next week, Be'ezras Hashem Yisparach. So thank you. It's a pleasure learning with all
of you.
Thank you
very much.
Yes, good Shabbos and good Yontif. For those of you who are here, I look forward to seeing you.
Okay, thank you for the class.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good day, everybody.
You too, Philip.